Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a Craig Heimbichner, and we're going to be talking tonight about the hidden hand of the occult. Craig, are you with us there?
I certainly am, Stan. Good to be back.
Well, it's good to be with you. And, of course, we've been just looking at your summary of what you're going to be covering tonight. And, of course, you're really going to be talking about the very heart of this whole movement to bring about a new world order, a new world religion. So I'm just going to let you sort of pick this up and run with it. But Craig has done a great deal of research and certainly is one of the people who has a sound understanding. And I think you're going to learn a great deal this evening. So why don't you pick up the story from there?
Okay, thank you, Stan. I don't know if it might not be useful just to mention that for those who are just joining us, I have spoken on this show before about Aleister Crowley, and that is still available in a tape set that they can order from you. And I'm not going to cover much ground about what we've talked about before, but just to mention for a brief moment that when I discussed Aleister Crowley, I highlighted a few things about him which are significant to us to understand world events today. And that is that Aleister Crowley was not merely a devilish figure as he's known, but he was a British agent. He worked for MI6 in England, and he was the leader of a Freemasonic lodge of odious infamy, and that is called the OTO. It's very seldom talked about because it's a very secretive society, but it's currently in 40 countries, and it stands for, by the way, OTO stands for Ordo Templi Orientis, which is Latin for Order of Oriental Templars. And basically, it's about a 100-year-old secret Freemasonic society, which encapsulizes the darkest levels of Freemasonry and Gnostic occultism.
I think it's so interesting that, this ties into intelligence. Does this overlap with the American CIA? Because certainly our American CIA has strong occultic overtones as well.
Yes, it certainly does. And to make a very quick overlap and to kind of whet everybody's appetite for what we'll be talking about tonight, I'd like to mention a sort of grandson, if you will, of Aleister Crowley, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino.
Is that really his grandson?
Well, not a real, literal grandson,
okay.
But I'd say a spiritual grandson.
All right. Well, you better explain to our listeners who Michael Aquino is, because, of course, many of them may not know, but this is the military officer involved in psychological warfare research who, he was a full colonel, and, of course, he was the head of the Temple of Seth, off branch of Church of Satan that had been started by LaVey.
That's correct. And what happened is 1966 on Walpurgis Nacht, that's the night of May Day, the evening before May Day, a high satanic holiday, the Church of Satan was founded, as you say, by Antoine LaVey. And Antoine LaVey took inspiration from Aleister Crowley, but made a more overt form of Satanism. And from his form of Satanism in the Church of Satan, his co-worker, and some say his ritual expert, Michael Aquino, who all this time was involving himself in military intelligence and climbing the ladder in the government, even though he was well known to government officials to be a Satanist, Michael Aquino split away in 1975 and formed the Temple of Set, which still exists in San Francisco. And Michael Aquino is sort of the emeritus head of it right now. He calls himself an ipsissimus, sort of the highest level of of godhood, he claims for himself. And he's still around, but I wanted to mention that some of the things he was doing and connected with, while the government knew he was leader of the darkest satanic order on the planet at that time, he was involved with the Special Warfare Center in Fort Bragg, U.S. Army JFK Special Warfare Centers, doing psychological operations, teaching there. He did a Special Forces training there. He was a Green Beret, paratrooper for the U.S. Army Infantry Center in Fort Benning, Georgia, military intelligence officer in Arizona, interdepartmental foreign affairs seminar. He taught for the Department of State in Washington, D.C. in 1983. I'm just skipping over a lot of what he's done and hitting the highlights. Taught a strategic intelligence course at the Defense Intelligence Agency in Washington, D.C. in 1984. Was involved with National Defense University, Joint Space Intelligence Operations in 1990 in Fort Leavenworth. So we can go on and show that he's not only heavily involved, but we can say he received a number of United States military decorations. Bronze Star Medal in 70, Meritorious Service Medal in 94, that's pretty recent, and on about a dozen different medals. So here's a man who introduced, by the way, he led the first satanic funeral in the Arlington Cemetery for the U.S. Army.
We're having satanic funerals at Arlington now?
Oh, yes, and he started it off. And he worked into the U.S. Army Chaplain's Manual pages on Satanism. So if you're going to be a chaplain in the Army, you get this manual which explains to you how to be pastorally sensitive to Satanists. This is in our Army today. And I just mentioned Michael Aquino because people have, unfortunately, a lot of well-intentioned trust in the organs of our government. And when they learn these things, it's a sort of a shock, but it's a necessary one to understand significant world events that are not what they are portrayed to be in the normal news channels. So I'd like to get right into a couple of them that are of recent memory, and I wanted to talk tonight about, in particular, September 11th's tragedy, and also the recent Washington, D.C. sniper attacks, and how, in my opinion, there is evidence of the hidden hand of the occult behind both events. I'd like to start by saying, to kind of prepare the listeners, to understand all of this, one must understand a couple of things about Freemasonry. And I know you've written extensively about it, Stan, and you've had many, many experts on your shows to go into this, so I'm glad to be able to talk to your audience. Freemasonry, normally people associate it with sort of a well-intentioned service club, but actually that's just the window dressing. It's sort of the cover. It no more has to do with what Freemasonry is really about than Al Capone's soup kitchens had to do with what the Mafia was all about. It's just a front and a cover and a recruiting and testing ground so that those who are really serious and of good potential for what the work is all about can be recruited to that more odious work.
But certainly there are a lot of Masons who really don't know what Masonry is about.
Absolutely. The great majority. And that serves a couple of purposes. One is to give a good name to Freemasonry, because if you have people in Freemasonry who are good citizens and well-intentioned and even patriotic, it gives a good association to the entire spectrum of the organization. And the other purpose is that it serves as a sort of testing ground so that the recruiting sergeants, if you will, who are walking around in the lodges, who may not be recognized as the outer leaders of the lodge, but have their occult ties to darker lodges elsewhere, can recruit people. In fact, in my earlier talk several months ago, I mentioned that's exactly how Aleister Crowley, who was a 33rd degree Freemason, was recruited into this darker lodge, the OTO, by his mentor Theodore Royce in Germany. And that's what they do. Crowley then ascended the Masonic ladder. Most Masons have no idea that the lodges actually go past 33 degrees, but there are two rites, Memphis and Mizraim, that go to the 97th and 90th degrees, respectively. And Crowley went to the top of those, and then he joined this OTO. The OTO is, it won't call itself satanic like LaVey does, but actually it's even more dangerous, in my opinion, because Satanism with the Black Mass and all of that blasphemy is really just a rebellion against Christianity, whereas what OTO is all about is replacement of Christianity. It has a Gnostic Mass, not a Black Mass, which is very vile, but it's aiming to actually replace the religion, to get rid of it entirely. And it's having quite a bit of success, as we can mention, through things like, very rapidly, I'll summarize it because we talked about it earlier, but Wicca is known as an OTO encampment, and that is all over the place in bookstores and with youth and on TV and shows and everything else. It's very popular.
I think Harry Potter would fit into that, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's the next one to mention is sort of kiddie occultism, and a lot of people say, oh, that's completely innocent. Well, if you don't believe in darker realities, one might think so, but I happen to know that Harry Potter's movie, after it was released, was accompanied by an explosion of occultism in the bookstores aimed at kids, spell books for children and so forth. And we're not talking about card tricks, Marshall Brodeen and that sort of thing. We're talking about witchcraft and black magic. And right now there's a book that just came out on the science of Harry Potter, which ties Dumbledore to John Dee as a representative character allegorically for John Dee, who was, as some may know, the founder of sort of Elizabethan age occultism, Rosicrucianism, and a channel for what became Freemasonry. And he was the author of what's called Enochian Magic, which became the bedrock of the Church of Satan. And you can read those rituals with credit to John Dee in the Satanic Bible. So that's supposed to be the inspiration for the figure in the movies of Harry Potter, played by Richard Harris, who I understand just passed away. I'm understanding also that the second movie is pulling in a lot of money and a lot of attention.
I think $87 million the first weekend. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's pretty significant. I think the first was $90 million, if I'm remembering correctly. So we have a very large degree of acculturation, OCC, of our culture. And as I talked about last time, that's largely due to this Ordo Templi Orientis and its offshoots. Now, in our government, however, and in our political events, we have a bedrock of Freemasonic members, and as you pointed out, Stan, many of them may be members just because of desiring the sort of good old boy benefits which the lodge brings and that sort of thing, or they could have a family member and that's why they joined. But once they join and once they go up the ladder, they take a lot of oaths. And these oaths have to do with covering up for each other and advancing and promoting each other. And as the oaths go up the ladder, as their degrees go higher, the oaths become more extensive. At first, they vow to keep secrets, murder and treason excepted. But by the time they reach the seventh degree, the Royal Arch degree, that oath changes, and it says it has no exceptions. So if you can imagine, a lot of people in our government have taken an oath whereby they will cover for each other, their brothers in the lodge who are in Congress and the United States Supreme Court, and I might mention our President George W. Bush is a member of the Freemasonic Skull and Bones Order, which we can talk about in a minute. But these people take these oaths to cover for each other, not exempting murder and not exempting treason. Now, how can they serve in public office and take an oath to the Constitution and simultaneously have taken this oath? That's
you know,
the question.
I think it's so interesting, Craig. We carry a book by David Sippers called Sellout, and it's the story of the House of Representatives' effort to impeach Bill Clinton and how hard they worked. And, after he was actually impeached by the House of Representatives, they took the charges over to the Senate, and who did they meet with but 33rd-degree Mason Trent Lott,
right.
Who said, well, we're not going to let you do this. We'll give you 3 days, and you can call two witnesses and three witnesses. And you read the book, and you say, how could they be so, crass? I mean, here, many of these congressmen had risked their reputations, risked reprisal to try to bring the president before the bar of justice. And during the trial, they could have brought in so much other information. But, of course, this was not to be allowed by Trent Lott, because although Bill Clinton was not a Mason. He was the highest-ranking Demolay in our country, and as you well know,
that's
the
correct.
Demolays are the sons and relatives of Masons. In fact, Jacques Demolay was burned at the stake in the 1300s because they were the Knights Templar that he was the chief of, were a Luciferian organization. And here you see Arlen Specter, who's a 32nd or 33 degree Masonic senator, crossing from the Republican to the Democrat side to vote with the Democrats against the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And nobody could understand why, you know, the Senate wouldn't pick this up. Well, it's very obviously the Masonic influence there would not allow them, of course, to bring a fellow occultist, certainly somebody from the highest-ranking Demolay in the country, trial or do anything. They were going to find him innocent, and David Shippers and the others never understood this.
You're absolutely right. He is the highest-ranking Demolay, senior Demolay member, and Demolay is exactly what you said. It is an order named after Jacques Demolay. Jacques Demolay, there are a lot of disinformation books out trying to whitewash what he did, but you occasionally find an occult book that's rather honest about his involvement with Satanism. And it's well known in the Masonic orders, in the upper degrees, in the 30th degree in particular, which is called the Kadosh degree. There is a ritual which recalls the murder of Jacques Demolay, as they coin it, or the capital punishment of that age, quite a severe method. But every Mason who goes through that ritual in the Scottish Rite, which is the predominant and politically active Masonic order around the world, and it did dominate the Supreme Court for many years when prayer was taken out of schools, when Roe versus Wade passed, and so forth. We had a predominance of Scottish Rite Freemasons on the Supreme Court. But the Scottish Rite 30th degree involves stabbing with a knife at two skulls. There are three skulls laid out on a table, and one has a crown on it, one has the Pope's tiara on it, and one has a wreath on it. The one with the wreath in the middle represents Jacques Demolay, who for the Satanic order is a martyr. And the one that has the crown on it represents Philip le Bel, the King of France, Philip the Fair, who gave the order to have him executed. But and the one which has the Pope's tiara on it, which was worn until Paul VI got rid of it, the Triple Crown, was representative of the Pope at the time. I'm trying to remember which Pope it was. I think it was Pius V. I might be wrong about that. But anyway, be that as it may, they stab at the two skulls representing church and state, and they say, "Down with imposture." Now, I have photos of that from Masonic manuals and the actual wording, and this is done. So can you imagine, in addition to taking oaths to cover for each other, murder and treason not accepted, when they go to a higher degree, they have to ritually enact an assault on church and state. Now, it's not even just that bad, but in the 33rd degree ritual, or excuse me, the 32nd degree ritual, they have to, I'm getting them mixed up. It is 33rd degree. The 33rd degree, they have to drink wine out of a human skull and embrace a skeleton in some of the rituals that are done. So we have all these congressmen, judges, military men, and so forth, who've gone through this set of rituals and done all of this. To what end, we might ask? Well, if you read their own works, they really say quite overtly that they want to build a new world order. They call it the Holy Empire of Masonic Brotherhood, and that's what Albert Pike, Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite, called it. And he consciously said in page 321 of his book for the higher-ranking Freemasons, as you well know, Stan, you quote it in your own book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that the light that they pledge themselves to seek and to acquire more of through all their degrees from the first on forward, they finally learn comes from Lucifer, the light-bearer. And on page 321, he reveals that and says, "Doubt it not." Now, most Masons don't know that, but that's the tragedy. They join this order for self-advancement or family ties or whatever, but they're gradually sucked in to this cult of darkness, which is working against the principles of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights and our foundations of our nation. I would like to say, too, that Freemasonry, it can't be understood unless you know that it's a system of initiation through symbol and ritual. And that's very important to the Masons. That includes action, words, numbers, pictures, and architecture. A lot of people may not know it, but Washington, D.C. itself was laid out in 1791 by Lafont, a Masonic architect, to fit Masonic architectural patterns. And if you trace out, or 1792, excuse me, if you trace out where the White House sits down to some of the other main buildings, you'll find the Washington Memorial and so forth. You'll find a square and a compass, and you'll even find the symbol for Baphomet, the goat of Mendes. And this is it was consciously done, and I should pause because I'm taking a lot of knowledge for granted in the audience and explain the goat of Mendes fits into the upside-down pentagram, the five-pointed star with the point downward and the two points upward for the horns of the goat, and it stands for Satan. And it's in Masonic lodges. It's usually explained to the lower members in a deceptive way, but in the upper degrees they find out it's Lucifer.
For our listeners, why the point downward is the beard of the goat. The two adjacent things pounding sideways are the ears, and then, of course, the two at the top are the horns of the goat. And
right.
Anytime you see a star with the point down, they understand that is the symbolism, the Gelt of Mendes. The average individual looks at it, doesn't understand the significance of the star with the point down. And you go to the pictures they have over in Europe where they talk about the European Union. And they actually have a picture of the Tower of Babel.
Right.
And above that are stars, about in each star, the point is down. They understand, and they laugh at the average individual, too dumb and stupid and decadent to understand of the noble symbolism of the craft.
That's exactly right, and I'm glad you brought that up about the European Union. They want to build a secularized new world order, a sort of paradise on earth. They want the Garden of Eden. They want to get back into it and have no God, but they want to be gods, just like the story in Genesis, which where the serpent says, "Ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." The whole drama originates right there and is still going on. I wanted to mention, though, Bush's membership in the Skull and Bones Order. That was an order from 1832, if I remember,
right,
in Germany, chapter 322 of a German secret society, which probably seems to have been tied to the Bavarian Order of the Illuminati. Well, they have to do some very scaly rituals to join that at Yale. And both George Bush the Elder and the current President Bush are members of that.
As was the grandfather. Who was indicted for trading with the enemy during the Second World War for his aid to the Nazis.
That's exactly right.
And that's covered in Alexander Robbins' excellent book entitled The Secrets of the Tomb.
Right. Well, Freemasonry controls its members, as I mentioned, and we have to understand that it's really because of all these oaths and because of the secrecy and the lodge connections and its dark origins, it's a major controlling force behind our government. And so we shouldn't be surprised, really, to find symbol and ritual behind major actions and events involving our government. And just to highlight the Masonic architecture of Washington, D.C. for a second here, which has also been exposed by a cult sympathetic author, David Ovison, in a recent book called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And he goes through point by point, detail by detail, and exposes a lot of the astrological depictions and so forth in our nation's capital back there in Washington, D.C. This is consciously done because Masons love ritual, and they love symbol to drive home their points and initiate their members, and as they believe, to initiate society as a whole at a sort of subliminal level. They really are into not only crafting at the governmental level through law and through force, New World Order, but they want to acculturize our people, which is what they're doing. There's also the fact that the Pentagon itself is an occult figure. A lot of people know the pentagram, as we just talked about, point upwards or point downwards, the five-pointed star. But if you look at a five-pointed star with the intersecting lines, the inner border is a pentagon. And we'll get to that when we talk about September 11th and the attack on the Pentagon in a few minutes. But I wanted to also mention that the United Nations itself, which grew out of efforts from predominantly by members of the Council on Foreign Relations and earlier work paved the way by, goes back to those who founded the League of Nations as the first try, the League of Nations itself was not just a creature of some of these conspirators, but as a whole was supported by Freemasonry, and that's well documented. So you can look at the paganism at the United Nations. You go into its temple, and there's a stained glass window of Pan, the goat, right up there to be honored as in a Christian church. You would see a stained glass window with an image of Jesus Christ. They have the goat of Mendes up there in the United Nations. Well, that's no accident. This all ties together. Well, I would mention that you have a hard time, if you're outside of these lodges, finding membership lists or, you know, memos which say, we did this event. But you can usually figure it out if you're an astute observer and you pick up the clues. You can discern the hidden hand. It's almost like you could say, if where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's been a lot of smoke lately where we can see that the reality is different from what we're getting. As you say, illusion is usually king. We're going to try to penetrate a little bit behind the illusion now and talk a bit about September 11th, if you don't mind. Before I get into that, I guess one more thing I'll mention is that the government is frequently a force which works in secrecy to allow, if not to perpetrate, some of the events which it later deplores publicly. And one of the most well-known events is the Oklahoma City bombing. I can't go into detail on that for now, but I can say that those who are interested can look at the research by William F. Jasper on that subject. He really broke ground there and showed that this is not what we were told it was. It was not just the work of a lone nut or two, but there was actual detailed evidence that shows that the government wanted and allowed this to happen in order to gain more power and more control and advance their agenda. I would just say anyone who's skeptical about that can read William Jasper's work.
And that's, of course, in the New American, would be available on their website.
That's right. Now, you know, ritual and symbol. Let's take that for a moment and talk about September 11th. You know, a couple of things come to my mind right off the bat. When September 11th happened, there were two things which stood out to me as showing that it wasn't exactly what we were told it was. One is the fact that there is a flight interception law required when an aircraft deviates on FAA radar from flight patterns and shows that it's being hijacked. And there's a law, and it does not require the command of anybody to act on. It is supposed to be self-activated. And what happens is, if you're watching FAA radar and you see a plane deviate significantly from its flight pattern, military aircraft are supposed to take off and intercept and find out what's going on. Well, nothing happened like that. And those planes were flying over our Capitol, you know, toward the Pentagon and so forth, in the most sensitive areas where the security is the tightest and the radar is the best. And nothing was sent up to intercept. Stan Goff, who's a retired U.S. Army veteran and he's taught military science and doctrine at West Point, wrote a whole article about this and challenged this based on this law. Why weren't planes sent up to intercept? How could this have happened? That's just inexplicable by accident. Not just one of the planes, but every plane involved in this was allowed, it seems, to make its maneuvers.
We're going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be right back in just 3 minutes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty really is listener-supported. And if you're out there listening to us across America, we hope that many of you will decide right now that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because this is how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours every day, and reaching out to almost 50 stations every week with the truth. Now, some of the stations are just half an hour a week, but at least half an hour a week on 50 stations across America, the truth is coming through. Some places like the American Christian Network were fortunate enough to be on every single day, so every single weekday. So we certainly do have at least some impact out there by shortwave, by internet, by satellite, and by radio to reach people with the message that they need to hear. Now, there are an awful lot of people, good people across America, who feel just the way you and I do, but they feel alone. They have no idea. And of course, they divide us by making us right-wingers or left-wingers or Republicans or Democrats, and it's all part of a game. It's part of a game to get us like the hamster running on the wheel, never really getting any place, just running and running and running. And the message that we have to get out is, if we can reach enough people in time, with God's help, we may be able to have some impact on this truly spiritual battle, which is why I do what I do and why we have guests like our Craig tonight, who are willing to take their time to do the research and then come on with us to bring to the American people the truth about what's going on. So if you'd like to join with us in this epic struggle to partner with us, why, our number is 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. If you'd like to get a copy of our October newsletter, which is the testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence of Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband, Ron, died in the South Tower, why, we'd be glad to send you one free of charge. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, if you have access to the Internet, go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. And we'd also suggest that perhaps you should tell others about our website and about our Internet programs, because you can actually listen to our programs either at my website or at the Genesis website or the American Freedom Network website 5 hours every day. And we encourage you to tell others, that to get them listening, and perhaps something that I say, or probably even more important, something one of my guests says, will touch them. They'll begin to at least challenge what's going on. What people have to understand is we've been brainwashed methodically and systematically through our years in government schools, and especially the greatest victims are those who go to college, where they're lied to and lied to and lied to and taught history that has nothing to do with reality. And then, of course, when they get out in the real world and they begin reading books, most of the books have been written to conceal the truth, but there are books out there that will tell you the truth, and our job is to make those available and to point people towards the realization of the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. So if you'd like to partner with us, remember our number. It's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Craig Heimlicher, and we're not going to take any calls, at least this first hour, because Craig has so much to cover, and perhaps in the second hour, why we can, if you're listening to us up in the Great Northwest, if you have access to the Internet, you can hear the second hour by at RadioLiberty.com, and if you don't have a computer, you need to get one. The prices are lower now than you'll probably ever see again, and of course, well, one of these evenings we'll talk to you about what's going to happen financially. But right now is an excellent time to get a computer so that you can begin tuning in and with our programs and accessing the phenomenal material on the Internet, having full knowledge that the CIA is working there to give you disinformation, and you need to know the people and the ministries you can trust. So you pick up the story from there, Craig.
Okay, thanks, Dan. I was just talking a little bit about how the flight pattern, the deviated flight patterns for September 11th should have triggered interceptions by law.
But, you know, nobody really wants to bring that up. Why were there no planes there? Why was it an hour, almost an hour and 40 minutes before the first plane was hijacked till the third plane hit the Pentagon, and not one military fighter anywhere in the world has been, you know, sent aloft to intercept a plane that is about to attack our nation's capital? Do people really believe that?
Well, obviously we don't, but I think the people don't think about it because they've been overwhelmed, I think, with the imagery of the event and the tragedy of the event and have not been given a chance to sit back and analyze the event. We're really manipulated emotionally with the way this has been portrayed. Another point that fits right in with that one, if people will stop and analyze the way this rolled out, is that the pictures of all of the perpetrators and suicide bombers were released very rapidly, so to speak, after this event happened. So in other words, we're supposed to believe that the government didn't know anything about this, couldn't stop it during the entire time, nearly 2 hours that it's happening. But as soon as it happens, shortly thereafter, their intelligence work is so amazing that they're able to release all of these pictures, and that's the entire story right there.
And in fact, in Christian Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and this was why that testimony was so important and why we produced it in our October newsletter, she pointed out that according to the New York Times, within hours of the attack, why FBI agents were swarming all over the areas where the hijackers lived, the flight schools where they trained, the restaurants where they ate, the neighborhoods where they lived. And she said if they had no idea there was going to be an attack, if they had no idea ahead of time who the hijackers were, how is it possible that within hours of the attack they had FBI agents at the restaurants, neighborhoods, and flight schools? And her response was the answer to that should be self-evident. What's self-evident? They knew ahead of time.
Right.
They obviously knew ahead of time. But, of course, how can you admit that to the American people?
Right.
Because that means we left those people there to die for the greater good. And the greater good is, of course, to involve us in the coming war in the Middle East.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the spin that's been given to this event when we've had whistleblowers come forward is that, well, this is just a tragic level of incompetence. And, in fact, we need to correct the incompetence by getting newer and better and more intelligence. We need an MI5 organization is the most recent one that we're hearing. We need something even better than the FBI, something, you know, that can really screen email and get into the homes so this is the spin they're giving it. But if somebody will analyze it, it can't possibly be put down to incompetence at that level. That's just straining credulity too much. Well, if we look at it, there's not just there are not just obvious indicators of the government's complicity in this, but there are also symbolic and ritual associations, and that's really the heart of what I'd like to talk about tonight. And it's only understandable if we keep in mind that the Freemasonic bedrock behind the government loves to revel in symbol and ritual. And if we understand that, we can look at this event and perhaps get some greater understanding of just what went on. And this will show us, by finding the glove, so to speak, that there is a hidden hand behind this event and it has a darker purpose. Let's mention for a moment that there is a bedrock doctrine in the occult, and it was stated by Aleister Crowley in his magnum opus, is a large, large tome called Book 4, that every magician should study what he calls the Holy Kabbalah. Well, I don't call it holy. I call it quite unholy. I should mention, by the way, Hillary Clinton publicly let it be known that she was involved with the Kabbalah. Most recently, Madonna was talking about the Kabbalah. There are Kabbalah books all over the place, usually a sort of pop-mutilated form of it. But what in the world is a Kabbalah? Well, it's a very pagan doctrine. It goes all the way back to Egypt and Babylon. It was transmitted through some esoteric Judaic channels. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the Old Testament, and that's important for people to keep in mind, because people like Madonna are running around saying not only that it was given by Moses, but that Jesus Christ was involved with it. Nothing could be further from the truth. He had no religion of secrets. In fact, he said, "I've done nothing in secret." But Crowley and the occultists love to get into this sort of esoteric dreck. And it has a lot to do with number. So Crowley wrote a book, and I have a copy of it. In fact, you can buy it fairly easily now, since the occult books are all over the place. And he has a Kabbalistic work called Sefer Sephirot, and it gives us the occult symbolism of numbers, including the numbers 9 and 11, as well as 9-11. So one of the things I wanted to do was just to look that up. I already knew some of the associations, but it was very illuminating. In the occult, 9 indicates the special fire of black magic and the term for being kindled. It also relates to becoming powerful. And number 11 indicates volcanic fire. So you can note right away that both numbers relate to fire. Well, what did we see on 9-11? A lot of fire. A very profound level of flame and burning of the Twin Towers. And 11 also indicates to attack as well as to conceal, according to Aleister Crowley. And it also indicates pride and haughtiness. 9-11 itself indicates hell and some sort of beginning. Well, those are not just general comments that you can overlap on any event that comes along. They very mysteriously coincide, very specially, with the events on 9-11. And there are some other aspects to this, too. That as I get a little further, the picture gets a little clearer as we sort of focus our lenses. In the OTO itself, both 9 and 11 indicate the highest degrees of initiation into what's called the sanctuary of the Gnosis, and they're linked in the OTO, back to front, so to speak. So they have very special meanings, and that will be understood by someone in the OTO. If you talk about 9 and you talk about 11, it's almost like saying to a Christian, 3-in-1. You know, to a Buddhist, that doesn't mean anything, but you say 3-in-1 to a Christian, and a Christian will understand that to mean the Trinity. It's like an immediate code signal. Well, that's how 9 and 11 are. So that was another clue to me. 9 is also a head-chopping degree symbolizing severing heads in the Scottish Rite. And 11 also symbolizes a beginning. Well, what did we see after 9-11 and the Twin Tower catastrophe? We really saw not only a hell and a fire and an attack, but a beginning, a new phase in the police state and an advancement of the New World Order. It is absolutely ratcheted into high gear after 9-11. So now, to illuminate it even more, to get to the Twin Towers and the symbolism there, I turn to the current head of the OTO in England, the Typhonian Ordo Templiorum Disorder, and he was taught personally by Aleister Crowley, and that's Kenneth Grant. And he writes about these numbers and connects them to two towers, believe it or not. He writes about the 9th and 11th spheres in the Kabbalah, and it's too much to go into all the details except to say that in the Kabbalah is a sort of pantheistic doctrine about emanations from some divinity, which is actually Lucifer. And they connect themselves and they balance each other, and they're connected to something Kenneth Grant calls the double wanded one, which is two pillars or towers. And he says it's a quote, a double lamp formed of twin phalli united at their base. And I'm sorry to have to mention that, except this is a very perverse order, as all of the occult devolves down into forms of perversion. He says that in his book, The Magical Revival, on page 22. And interestingly, the two towers, the double-wanded one, is also called by Grant the Phoenix. And that was Aleister Crowley's secret name. Most people knew him as the Great Beast. He called himself the Great Beast 666, or To Megatherion in Greek. But his secret name was the Phoenix. Well, that's what this two towers, the double-wanded one, signifies in the OTO. So isn't that interesting that it ties right back into a symbol for their main leader? And it also indicates something that rises from the ashes. Well, what rose from the literal ashes of 9-11? This New World Order is rising every day. I've never seen such an accelerated pace as things move forward. Grant writes about the symbolism of the two towers being the double equinox, the beast and Babylon conjoined to form the androgynous Baphomet, which is that goat of Mendes or Satan. And of course, the beast and Babylon refer to a biblical image of some of the forms of supreme evil that will be arising in the latter days in the book of Revelation. So these are very dark symbols, and the OTO understands this very well. So is it just a coincidence that we see an attack like this with all of these symbols that are instantly recognizable to the most initiated occultists, or is it something more? Well, I believe it's something more. Aleister Crowley and his disciple Kenneth Grant also teach that the two aspect of the two towers, the double-wanded one, the Lord of the Two Horizons, it's called, goes back to the worship that's accorded to the ancient sun and star worship accorded to Sirius, the double star, binary star. Sirius is interesting because it's a binary star. There's a Sirius A and a Sirius B. One is the red star that with Canis Major, the big dog, and the other is a sort of dark, hidden star. Well, that's known to the in the occult as symbolizing this Lord of the Two Horizons. That's why they're so interested in two towers, and they also call that Set On, the Egyptian god Set and Anubis, or Satan. And that's what ultimately Kenneth Grant advocates, is the honoring, the exaltation, and the spread of the energy, he says, of Satan across the planet. He says that in his book, Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God. And 11 is so important to him that he opens his book with a chapter titled The One Beyond 10. Well, that's the number 11. Why did he talk about 2? Why is 2 so important? Well, if you think about it from the spiritual standpoint, it really symbolizes disintegration. Sin causes internal fragmentation. And what is going on right now is not only a herding of us into this New World Order, as George Bush the Elder called it 11 times publicly, but it also symbolizes an inner schizophrenia, which is caused by sin and anxiety. And we see evidence of that in our culture all around us, as we're given miscues, counter cues, and we're really just beat up like a dog with being teased by a bone on one side and a dog biscuit on the other, until people are running around almost to a level of acceptance of illusion that's historically unique. I don't know what I could go on and comment and say something about the Muslim nature of the attack, because
go ahead and let's get into the Muslim nature of the attack, because that really is a pivotal of this whole thing. But of course, people have to understand that the Muslim religion, the God that they worship, is certainly not the God that is worshipped by the Christian and the Jew.
That's correct. The Muslim God Allah is stated in the Quran to have no son. That's repeatedly stated. Well, right there, we know that this is not the God of Christianity, because we have the Father, we have the Son, we have the Holy Spirit. That is one God. There's no way to make an equation of the two. But we're really being, I believe, distracted a lot by the ascendancy of the Muslim religion, which is a very real event right now, and it's something to take note of. But it's also being exploited to distract us from the occult orders that are proceeding to herd measures in terms of the police state, the Information Awareness Office, which is headed out of DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, by John Poindexter, of all people. And these sort of things are advancing. So in magic, in a magic show, you always watch the hand that's not moving. That's the one that's doing the trick. Right now, the hand that's waving the card around and distracting everybody is waving the Muslim card. Everybody's watching that. But what we have to learn to do is to watch the hand that's not moving, and that's the one that's more dangerous. That's the one that's pulling the magic trick off and hoodwinking all of us, which is actually a Masonic term, to hoodwink. A lot of mileage was actually gained by this 9/11 action, but we have to ask ourselves, was it really gained for the Taliban, for the Al-Qaeda, or the Muslims in general? Not really. Who really benefited from 9/11? Well, the Holy Empire of Masonic Brotherhood has benefited. Look at the advance in terms of the New World Order. Look at the strengthening of the United Nations. Look at the strengthening of the police state. And you can go on and show who really benefited. And that's another clue to who is really waving the hidden hand, the one that you can't see because it's moving very subtly. I mentioned also that the Pentagon was attacked, and the inner border of the pentagram is the Pentagon. So when it was attacked, there's a symbol there of profound level of occult penetration to the heart of a pentagram. So I would argue, and it's my thesis, that not the Muslims, they are used in this, but they are not the ultimate perpetrators of what's going on right now, and they are not the ultimate benefactors. Although they're not to be ignored, but they are merely the front hand in the magic show. and the hand that's moving at the back must be attended to, or we can't understand what's going on.
All right, I certainly would agree with that. In other words, I have little question that the Muslims were involved, but what energized them, who trained them, who financed them, who gave them the ideas? And I believe, of course, that they probably were energized by these same occult forces,
yes,
which really can gain control of the minds and hearts of men.
That's true. And in fact, not only that fact is I would say, evident if we trace things back, but we can find that even on the documented historical level of recent note, that people like Osama bin Laden, we know, was trained by the CIA in Afghanistan. We know that the government of our country was involved in training him. And we know that our government, of course, has propped up Saddam Hussein. We also know now that our government gave him biological weapons. So isn't it interesting how we are able to create these monsters, and then we turn around a few years later and exploit the danger to advance this holy empire of Masonic Brotherhood, this new world order?
Well, I think it's really so interesting, of course, the close relationship between George Herbert Walker Bush and the bin Laden family. And
yes,
not only through Carlyle Corporation, but I've read in a number of places whenever George Herbert Walker would go to Saudi Arabia, he would stay with members of the bin Laden family. Now, we're told, of course, they'd broken with Osama bin Laden, but there's a great deal to suggest that isn't true, including an article we have in Le Figaro, a French newspaper about bin Laden being in the American hospital in Dubai in June or July, I think it was July 4th to 10th of last year, where he was visited not only by members of his own family, who really had never broken with him, but also by the local CIA chief. And that story went out all over Europe, never
right,
once mentioned here in the United States.
Right.
But of course, then we see, you know, the relationship between George Herbert Walker Bush and of course, the bin Laden family. Then we see the relationship between he and a man named Hinckley. Hinckley, who shot the president, that just happened to be the son of one of George Bush's closest friends.
I'm glad you brought all of that up, and you're absolutely right that Europe has been comparatively all over this story about the Bush partnership with the Saudi bin Laden group and the bin Laden family, but it's been suppressed in our country. There was a small mention in passing in the New York Times, buried and then withdrawn. A few researchers have bantered it about from various points of the spectrum. I know Michael Hoffman talked about it. Most recently, Gore Vidal released an essay, The Enemy Within, and made reference to it. But in terms of the larger news community, it has been ignored and suppressed in this country. And I think the average American would wonder if they knew that the Bush family has partnered with the bin Laden family for many years, why don't we know this fact, and why are news agencies suppressing it? Well, you can't understand this unless you understand the oaths and the lodges to cover for each other. Murder and treason is not accepted. And this is treason, and it's not to be revealed. I also wanted to mention the sniper event, because this is another one which, as it unfolded, I was following it. And, of course, we got the official version, but we have the hand at the back that's not moving, which indicated a few other things. As we know, the Washington, D.C. sniper attacks increased the anxiety of the American public tremendously and were able to beat down the remaining opposition to some of the homeland, quote-unquote, security, but you might want to call it homeland control or homeland police state measures that we've had advanced recently with almost no disagreement in Congress. What happened in that Washington, D.C. sniper attacks? Well, the two people eventually apprehended, John Muhammad and Lee Malvo, we were told that they basically, Muhammad had some ties with Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. Well, I'm sure he did. And I'm certainly no advocate of Louis Farrakhan nor the Nation of Islam. However, it's also not, we don't associate Louis Farrakhan with the Tarot. And we do know that the sniper left behind at one point a tarot card with a message scrawled on it. Now, that tarot card is an occult card, very well known in the OTO and other groups like that. And he left behind the death card, which is number 13. 13, of course, being not only the number of the coven, but the date of the death of Jacques de Molay, honored Satanist, as we mentioned before, in the upper degrees of Freemasonry. And he scrawled on it the message, "I am God." Well, as much as I completely disagree with Islam and Louis Farrakhan, neither are known to go around and promote that particular message. And who does promote that message? Well, the occultists do. It's a Gnostic message, gnosis, false wisdom. And it goes back to the Garden of Eden, ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. It's the sin of pride, the sin of Lucifer. So here we have a clear signal of an occult and Gnostic clue left behind. And yet, as soon as the two snipers are apprehended, there's no mention of this anymore, and we're told this is... these are a couple of nuts who had some associations with the Nation of Islam, and nobody mentions anything more. No investigative journalist, goes back over that and asks some questions, which is really interesting. Well, I have to ask those questions, particularly since 13 victims, that's the final total, that were shot, either wounded or dead. 10 were fatally wounded, and 3 were put in critical condition. So he stops after 13, he's apprehended. 13 being the number of the death card that he left behind. Why would a clue be left behind, some might ask, like this, which can lead us to discount the traditional version? Well, you can't understand this unless you know that Freemasonry and the occult not only want, as I said, governmental force and control over the populace, but they want to initiate us through symbol and ritual. And part of that uses the techniques of that are well known in hypnosis. In hypnosis, when you're inducing a trance and you're taking someone down into a deeper level of mind control, you give a test to them, and that test serves two purposes. I'm hearing the music, though, and I think I'll save that.
All right, fine. Well, you're going to have to save that before the next hour, and so this is the time when we have to say goodbye and good night to our listeners up in the Great Northwest, and of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders, for our ministers. But please remember Radio Liberty in your prayers. Pray for our provision and protection. Pray for the program we're going to put on tomorrow. We're sold out. 150 people will be there. Pray that it is a success and that the people benefit from what they learn. So until Monday, when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Thank you.
pop up and talk to you. I just want to just get all this information out there.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and right now we're going to ask people to hold their calls until Craig has got through what he wants to cover. Our special guest this evening, Craig Heimberger, and we're going to be talking more right now about the sniper attack and the occult overtones to this. Why did they leave a tarot card there? I mean, why were they really out there simply killing people? Why 13 people attacked? Go ahead, pick up this story, Craig.
Yes, certainly. Thanks, Dan. 13 people attacked, and the tarot card, the 13th card, the death card, with a message, I am God, which is a Gnostic message, which is a satanic message, which in fact is, if I can quote the current high priest of the Temple of Set, Don Webb, the satanic order we mentioned earlier, he said that the mission of the Temple of Set is to recreate a tradition of self-deification. That's calling yourself God. So here's a sniper who leaves behind a card, I am God. We know Michael Aquino has ties to the military at the highest levels, and we know, you know, as we covered last hour, all of these governmental connections with the occult. But nobody mentions this after they apprehend the men. No investigative journalist breaks a story asking about this. And so I'm going to talk about it a little bit, because there's a reason in the occult that clues are occasionally left as to what's actually happening. They do this for a specific reason. And the reason is related to the process of hypnosis, because they want to initiate the public. And they particularly do that through very effectively through the organs of media, through entertainment, and through education, and through our news channels, by dropping these sort of hypnotic clues. And what do? Well, any good hypnotist will tell you that as you're taking somebody down into a trance and you're gaining control over their mind, you do test their level of trance with something which risks bringing them out of it. But as you make that test, you get two things out of it. You find out the exact level of trance, what level of depth it is, and then the second thing is, if they don't come out of the trance, that test actually secures greater control and they pass immediately to a deeper level. And if you look at these clues that are dropped, if the general public does not wake up and question what's happening, is the general public is falling deeper asleep into a state of illusion and numbness and is succumbing to the control being wielded over them. And we see that because the public is distracted, the public will not ask these questions, the public is kept constantly busy with everything but the truth.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things was the message the sniper wanted read on television all across the country.
Right.
The sniper has been caught like a duck in the noose. What in heaven's name is that all about?
Well, I would have to look at that as a possible cue, to awaken from a hypnotic trance. I'll have to give some credit where credit's due on that one. I first read that from a researcher, Michael Hoffman, but it made immediate sense because I've done an extensive study of hypnosis. And in fact, when you bring somebody out of a hypnotic trance, you give them a cue. And especially if you have them in a sort of post-hypnotic trance, wandering around, stumbling around, operating on pre-induced signals, there has to be a way to bring them out of that, or they'll just sort of stumble around forever in it. And a lot of times the way that's done is by some very bizarre signal, such as a phrase like that that makes no sense to anybody, and no one's likely to say it, except it will be said at the right time in the right place. And that makes us think of the traditional Manchurian candidate, and that movie, by the way, was has been recently released on DVD, but for many years was suppressed, was unavailable and impossible to get a hold of. And that was an incredible movie, which showed uncannily and eerily, before the John F. Kennedy assassination, a scene which was so close to it that after the public experienced the tragedy of JFK's assassination, this movie suddenly disappeared. Well, in it, you have a hypnotized subject, a subject who's battered and hypnotized by mind control and goes out and carries out this assassination. We now know that the CIA was engaged for years prior to that in mind control operations, in MKUltra, and was recruiting some of the most diabolical figures to engage in these, and indeed doing the most unethical experiments on human beings imaginable. So that's standard operating procedure for the CIA, is to attempt these sort of things.
And it was so, really so interesting that one of the people was Sidney Gottlieb, and one of his men was a man named Jocelyn West, or affectionately known as Jolly West. It is probably not simply by coincidence that in the prison in Colorado, and I had this from three separate sources, one of them very close to Timothy McVeigh, that Timothy had regular visits from who else but Jolly West.
Right.
Why would a CIA mind control specialist be visiting Timothy McVeigh?
Well, I think that's a very good question. It should be asked asked repeatedly and asked of the CIA itself. As we know, George Bush, one of his maneuvers following 9/11 was to advocate the consolidation of the various organs of intelligence under the umbrella of the CIA. And this was met by some resistance from the people who were heading the various organs of intelligence. And we also know that George Bush the Elder, his father, was at one time director of the CIA. So these connections are so intense and so deep to the CIA, and these questions should be asked at the congressional level. The congressmen should be badgering the president with these sort of questions. But of course, as you pointed out earlier, just as when President Clinton faced some scrutiny, for the wrong reasons, I might add, he should have been questioned on his treason with China. But it was all covered up at the last minute due to Freemasonic oaths and ties with Trent Lott and DMLA member Clinton. So we see the same sort of ineffectiveness at work. That's why it's important to not only petition our congressman, but I think we have to expose the Freemasonic poison that dominates and controls too much of our organs of government, and we can't crack through this thing unless we beat that drum loudly until it's something's done. In fact, in England, back in the 70s, a young British journalist, Stephen Knight, started to do some great investigative journalism. He started with the Jack the Ripper murders, and he found out that once Scotland Yard unsealed its 100-year-old records, after the 100-year mark passed, they opened it up. He examined them and found out that these were Masonic murders, that there was not one Jack the Ripper, there were a number of them, and that they went around at the command of the Freemasonic physician in ordinary to the Queen, William Gull, on behalf of Lord Salisbury, to cover up the fact that, scandalously enough, Prince Edward had married a low Roman Catholic commoner and had fathered a child. Prostitutes knew this dangerous secret, so Gull had them go out and execute Masonic-style assassination, which was cutting open their throats, just as it says to do in the Masonic rituals and oaths and some other scaly, horrible things that were done. And this was also left behind as a clue, just as we mentioned. The clues are left behind. And it said, the Jewes are men who will not be stopped. Words to that effect. Well, who were the Jewes? A lot of people thought they were the Jews, but actually, that was a Masonic reference to the three Masonic assassins in the third standard Master Mason ritual, which every Mason must go through to complete his basic initiation. There's Jubala, Jubilo, and Jubilum.
You mean the men who killed Hiram Abiff?
Hiram Abiff, that's right. And every Mason who goes through that ritual knows what we're talking about. And this was a clear signal that this was all a Masonic murder. Well, it was all covered up by other Masons and Scotland Yard's dominated by them. So Stephen Knight brings this out in a book, and he follows up by doing another book called The Brotherhood, The Secret World of Freemasons. And he did great interviews. He avoided typical disinformation pitfalls. And by the way, I'd say there's a lot of disinformation on all of these subjects on the internet, and it takes a forest of mirrors to sort through. So people need to be careful what they read and what they listen to. But Stephen Knight was a good one, and he did a good job and showed how much Freemasonry dominates the courts and the police and the military, Parliament. Well, people started to become outraged in England and demanded public record disclosure of people in Parliament who were Freemasons. And this led to a group organizing called Victims of Masonic Ill-Treatment, or VOMIT, kind of amusing way to put it. But they were really, really mad because these are people who started to realize they'd probably been passed up in job promotions because Freemasons were favored, which happens all the time. And this led to such a scandal that somehow or another, we found Stephen Knight died mysteriously at the age of 33. We are told he died of natural causes, which I suppose is possible, but it's also another numerical coincidence that 33 is the highest degree in the Scottish Rite, which is the order that he mentioned in his book. So we should be demanding that sort of accountability from our governmental leaders if we really want to get things done in this country. Get full disclosure and demand that of our Congress. That's my opinion, anyway.
No, I certainly wouldn't disagree with you at all, but I think until the American people understand this, anybody in Congress who would dare to make that suggestion would probably have a similar accident to Stephen Knight. In fact, Jim Keith was a very capable young writer. I'd had him on my program a number of times, and
yes,
shortly after he wrote his book on mass control, going into the psychological control, and his excellent book on the Oklahoma City bombing,
right,
where he talked about the fact that Timothy McVeigh was mind controlled, why he had an arthroscopic surgery on his knee. Now, I probably did 1,000 knee arthroscopies. Nobody ever died on the operating table, but, well, with Jim Keith, he died on the operating table, and we find this so prevalent today. Young people, otherwise healthy people, who are making a difference, meeting an early demise, and yet, of course, you and I have to do what we do and trust in the Lord, knowing full well that whatever happens, it will be in His hands.
Well, that's exactly right. And yeah, I was just talking about Jim Keith to someone earlier tonight, as a matter of fact, and it was a tragedy. I think he was involved in some accident at the Burning Man Festival as well, which I don't think was an accident. He was investigating something there, and then the knee surgery. And anyway, it's a great tragedy.
Incidentally, we do carry all of Jim Keith's books.
They're
very, very hard to get, but we have them. He made a great contribution.
Yes, he did, and he was right on target with a lot of things. In particular, just as a quick sidebar, a lot of the disinformation we find today has to do with the whole subject of UFOs. We are inundated with books. As soon as people are onto some level of distrust of the government, they are quickly herded by design, I believe, into a false tangent off to look at a belief in aliens and so forth. Well, the doctrine of belief in aliens is taught in the OTO. Kenneth Grant teaches this. Aleister Crowley said he was visited by a preterhuman intelligence called IWAS, and Kenneth Grant says that was an extraterrestrial from the star Sirius, and all this sort of thing. So people are actually swallowing occult doctrine when they believe this stuff. I believe Jim Keith was onto something accurate there when he fingered the government as manipulating us deliberately with fear of these sort of things so that we can ask for greater control, so we can ask our masters to take care of us and protect us and so forth. But anyway, getting back to the government, getting back to Homeland Security, again, you look at the sniper attack. Who benefited from that? Louis Farrakhan, not on my favorite person list, did not significantly benefit from that. But Homeland Security sure did. The CIA has benefited with its consolidation. Information Awareness Office of DARPA has benefited. All the people who benefit are right in our government, and things are steamrolling ahead for the New World Order. So that, again, I believe, in conjunction with the Tarot card, The bizarre statement at the end, as you mentioned, that the John Muhammad made. These are all clues to the hidden hand, the hand that's not waving the obvious card out front in the, on the magic show, but the hand to really pay attention to, the hidden hand.
Well, you know, there is an interesting similarity, and I don't know whether it has any application, but if anybody studied the Oklahoma City bombing, you'll remember, of course, that Timothy McVeigh had written to his sister and said he was part of a secret special forces unit involved in criminal activity, and when Stephen Jones opened the defense to the defense of Timothy McVeigh, he opened with that statement that Timothy McVeigh was involved, was a working for the government as part of a secret special services unit involved in criminal activity. Well, the prosecution never addressed the issue, never tried to counter it.
Right.
Just went ahead with all the bizarre pictures. And is that true? Well, if you've never heard Craig Roberts' description of the story of what happened, we have an excellent audio tape on that. And what is really so incredible about this whole story is that Timothy McVeigh, supposedly goes AWOL or leaves the Special Forces unit because he's got blisters on his feet. Anybody really believes that? And then supposedly he goes AWOL from the Army and immediately gets a job working for an intelligence agency somewhere in the East, where he's in touch with Jolly West, and he's acting there as a guard, and he's there for some time. And the story just doesn't ring true. Well, I bring this up because I'd sent Craig an article I got out of the New York Times. I don't know what it means, but it was an interview with Muhammad's aunt, I think it was. When he was staying with her, first cousin, he said something to the effect that he was working for a special army unit.
Yeah, that's right. He said he was on a secret government mission to track down stolen army explosives, and he introduced Lee Melvo to her as a highly trained member of his undercover team. So that's what he told this lady, apparently or allegedly, and he also said that Melvo was skilled at infiltrating groups of youth to gain information, and claimed that he had been recruited into what he called a secret military unit and assigned to find 500 pounds of C4 explosives that were stolen from the Army in New Orleans. Well, you know, how much of that's true, it's always difficult to know at a first report, but it would certainly not be out of character given operations that we know do go on in MKUltra and similar CIA mind control operations that are also tied to the military, that are tied to people like Michael Aquino and others. It would not be out of character at all to find that we're dealing with some Manchurian candidates, especially in conjunction with the other clues that were left, like the tarot card.
And, of course, I've never heard that mentioned on any of the alternative media. And it was just, I have to read through the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and a couple of other newspapers, as well as a whole flock of magazines. And maybe once a week you'll come across a gem. Now, this may or may not be of any significance, but isn't it interesting that nobody has commented on the fact that Muhammad said he was operating on a special secret government unit, and isn't it strange that Timothy McVeigh said exactly the same thing in a letter to his sister?
The most amazing part to me, Stan, is that these stories, when they're very quickly surface on a back page somewhere or buried in a news story, they're not followed up on. That's the most amazing thing to me. If somebody will stop and ask, how can an entire country full of investigative journalists, trained and licensed and so forth, to dig dirt, to get to the bottom of the story, not be paying attention and seizing on these things when they do surface? Well, if you understand the organs of control and who dominates editorial rooms and policies behind news agencies and the information organs that disseminate our stories to us, there are people who try to do a good job, and they get themselves cut off at the knees, so to speak, when they turn stories in. Things are definitely filtered. You know, we don't get the full story.
And the other interesting thing from the New York Times was, of course, after Muhammad had been taken in and apprehended and placed in police custody, and I've forgotten which state it was in, and he's beginning to talk and about ready to confess, and in comes the federal government and seizes him and takes him away so that he can't tell the story. And, of course, then the government said, well, we weren't trying to keep him from telling the full story. And now we have him in our control, and now we're going to determine in which state he is going to be tried. Wait a minute, where does Ashcroft get off saying where anybody ought to be tried? These are murders. These are civil issues. No, the federal government intervened, took him from the place the custody he was in, and put them in a custody that where they wanted him tried. Everybody ought to be asking, well, you know, if there's nothing to conceal, why would they interrupt the questioning? Why would they seize him from the local authorities that had apprehended him? And why were they the ones that picked where he's going to be tried? There's something so strange about this, and yet nobody asked the questions.
That's exactly right. And as you know, one of the most discouraging things to see right now, although we can't lose hope or faith, and we have to fight all the harder, is that we see the Republican Party, the right wing, has abandoned constitutional principles and is just really marching lockstep largely behind this New World Order agenda, which is completely unconstitutional. And then the Democrats, very few of them are objecting either from their side of the aisle. It's really like a unified force, like the two pillars in the Kabbalah, like the Twin Tower. It's both sides are serving the same purpose here. I would like to mention also DARPA has other projects going on. I came across one recently, which I'm still researching. But we can talk about when you talk about mind control. They do some there are scaly experiments going on in fetal tissue research, which have been going on for years. There are some other things that reveal a for those who think that our government couldn't possibly be involved in these sort of things, some absolutely disgusting experiments in that area. And there's a DARPA and NASA are involved with a project called the Golem Project, Golem being an old legend that was sort of the pre-legend to Frankenstein, where by the power of the Kabbalah a clay figure was erected. Well, this has served as a sort of archetypal inspiration for all the attempts to clone, to engage in genetic tampering, to play God. And now, through DARPA, through Brandeis University, they are working on something called the Golem Project, which is a sort of evolutionary robotic where they're actually trying to build the cyborg. And they are working on, you know, we used to scoff and watch these movies like The Terminator and so forth, but or RoboCop. But our government is very seriously pursuing exactly these sort of creations, and it goes back to what was left in that tarot card, I am God. The government wants to be God, and the people running it believe they are God. And of course, at the highest levels, they're in the service of Lucifer. So we've got to recover our land and recapture it for the purposes for which it was founded, which were certainly far from this sort of thing.
Well, I agree with you totally, Craig, and the thing is, how do we reach the people? How do we make them believe? How do we make them understand the true spiritual nature of the battle? The enemy is not communism. The enemy is not even the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, the Skull and Bone Society, mm-hmm. but it is the dark spiritual forces that energizes and blinds all of these people.
Right. I think that what we can do is simply what we are doing,
right.
And that is to stand up and say it over and over in as many forms as we can. I think we're a little safer to say it in general than we were in the days of Captain Morgan, who was assassinated in the 1800s by fellow Masons when he first revealed the Masonic rituals, because we're in a whole different stage of the game right now, where the leaks are serving to induce the trance level down to a public level of I would call it somnambulism, where the public is very largely herded and controlled effectively. So the clues can be leaked without obstructing their purpose, except if we leak some of the key clues, we take some risks, Stan. That's true. But also, I think what we have to do is is that realize that when they do leak those clues, they take a great risk, just like the hypnotist who tests the level of trance. He might awaken the subject. So they are taking a risk, and we have to capitalize on that and try to extend it by releasing the truth loudly and clearly and try to awaken the public, just like you're trying to wake up a sleeping subject. We need to awaken the public and let them see what's going on, rub their eyes and sit up and see the truth, even if it's uncomfortable at first.
Well, fortunately, we have a voice, and hopefully that voice will grow, and hopefully there will be people out there who are listening, and I feel certain that the Lord will cause people who are supposed to listen to listen. So that's why I do what I do, and hope, of course, that what I do will touch the people that they're supposed to be touched. And we know that there is a growing listening audience, certainly on the Internet, and certainly the shortwave listening audience is growing beautifully in the afternoon. So I'm guardedly optimistic. You have to be optimistic in this. After all, I've been at it for 40 years, but I will tell you, although I think things are going to get terribly, terribly bad,
yes,
I'm more optimistic, yes, than ever before.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because when, I think it was St. Thomas More said, what was the quote about when the times are tough, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was to the effect, maybe somebody could call in with it. But
you're not talking about when the times get tough, the tough get going?
Well, it wasn't that, but it was there. No times are so bad where there can't be good men, something like that. And I feel that actually when things are difficult, it's a challenge for us to stand up and show real virtue in the face of a growing threat. And that's how heroes are born and made. Well, you know, I think I might also highlight the fact that we are hearing a lot right now that looks like Christianity from the mouths of some of our people in government, like George Bush will refer to God, and we hear that. And I'd like to caution people who are listening to this not to take that at face value, to remember that when Freemasons make a reference to God, the lower level Masons probably, you know, can mean, through their confusion, think they mean the same God that a Christian refers to, although they've taken an oath to the light, which they later learn in the higher degrees, it's Lucifer. But the more conscious, the more dedicated members, when they refer to God, they use the same word, they use the same three letters, but they don't mean the same thing. And they call it the great architect of the universe. And if you are driving by a Masonic lodge and you see that G on the side of the building in the middle of a square and compass, you ask a Mason what that means, so he might tell you it stands for God or geometry or the great architect. But what he won't tell you is what you learn if you study their volume Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, the Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite, Freemasonry, as I mentioned, the most politically active worldwide, which many of our congressmen belong to, Supreme Court justices have served on, and so forth. What it means is two things. He tells you it means gnosis, with a G-N-O-S-I-S, which is Gnosticism, or the occult belief that we are actually divine. We don't need to worship a god outside of ourselves. As Aleister Crowley said, there is no god but man. As Don Webb of the Temple of Set, the Satanic Order, said, purpose is self-deification. That's what they mean, Gnostic gnosis. And later on you learn it means generation. And what does that mean? Well, they're not talking about the generations of in a family lineage. They're talking about sexual activity. And if you penetrate to the heart of the occult, you will find a lot of perverse rituals and actions which are actually taught in the higher levels of Freemasonry. Now, that doesn't mean that every Mason is going off the lodge and participating in these things, but those who get into the occult orders most certainly do, and they always have. So that won't surprise people if they find out that George Bush and the Skull and Bones Order at Yale had to lie naked in a coffin and reveal details of his sexual history. So did William Buckley. That won't surprise people then to learn that at the Bohemian Club, where many of our highest-ranking government officials hang out, they engage in perverse things around and dance in druidic robes. All of this is documented, and it all ties back to the occult.
So we're going to be right back here in just 3 minutes with our special guest this evening. And we've actually, of course, got a four-tape set where we talked to a man who was there, who saw it all. He filmed it for BBC, a British broadcasting company. Isn't it interesting that it was never shown in America?
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will, of course, very seriously consider joining with us in this epic struggle as we reach out across America through the airwaves, through the Internet, through the satellite. Really, what a wonderful and unique privilege it is to have a voice in times like these. And so if you'd like to partner with us in our effort, our number is 1-800-5-448-9-27. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will tell other people about our programs, and they can, of course, listen to them on the radio. They can listen to them on the Internet at radioliberty.com. And in the Internet site, we have our newsletters. We have certainly our material that my treatise on the population control agenda, on the Georgia Guidestones, a great deal of information that will help you to better understand what's going on today. But our major strength, of course, is our archive programs, and we encourage you to get those, to listen to them, and of course we have many of them. All of our programs are on four tape sets, a number of videos, a lot of information which is there to help you communicate these ideas to others. And then, of course, we suggest that you very seriously consider, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletters. Our September newsletter explains to you what really happened on September 11th. Our October newsletter is the Senate testimony of Kristen Breitweiser. And if you would like a free copy of our newsletter, why, our number is 1-800-5-448-927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'd be glad to send it to you if you haven't had a free copy of our newsletter before. Of course, many, many people do subscribe to the newsletter, and if you'd like to, why, you could call that number and talk to the girls there that suggest a donation for the newsletter. So remember again our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we truly are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we've got Jerry calling. This is the third time Jerry's called from Los Angeles. So, Jerry, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to point out that in black Muslims, they differ from normative Islam. It's 0.12 of their, I guess you call it their creed, I don't know which, but they say God is man. And what their philosophy is that God passes to one man to another. So first it was, I forget the founder of...
His name is Muhammad.
Fawad... Well, anyway...
Oh, you're talking about the black Muslims here.
Yeah, black Muslims.
All right, fine.
Yeah, and then they believe, like...
Elijah Muhammad was...
Like, well, yeah, he was the second...
Right.
Yeah, and then they believe it was then passed down to Louis Farrakhan.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Jerry, but that's a little off the subject we're trying to get to tonight, but thanks so much for calling. Yeah. Go ahead there.
I don't think they play with the tarot regardless. To my knowledge, I've never heard of that association. That's why you have to put all the clues together. You know, one clue by itself doesn't really establish anything. That's why I urge people to be very careful when they're surfing the Internet or reading books or grabbing things off the shelf in a speculation section of the bookstore. They can really be misled if they find sloppy research, or sometimes it's deliberate disinformation. And I'd like to mention for a second that disinformation is one of the specialty arts of the occult. They have it down to a science. So, for example, let's say right after the JFK murder, if a theory came out which showed that there was a Freemasonic hidden hand behind it, as I'm absolutely convinced there was, and it was covered up by a lot of Masons in charge of the entire research operation, including Earl Warren, who was 33rd degree, and Lyndon Baines Johnson and others, if you have that theory come out with some evidence to back it up, all they have to really do is release 10 competing theories. And then people will be so confused, they write off, they dismiss the entire thing as in the realm of a quote-unquote unsolved mystery. They're real specialists at doing this. And they just keep us bamboozled with a deluge of disinformation.
So like the murder on the Orient Express.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, yeah, of course, you know about that. You've written about it and done some... I like your analogy there. I have to admit, I admire that quite a bit. You know, it's important to find... It's important both to awaken ourselves to critical levels of inquiry into these things, but it's also important to have some perspective and insist on some evidence as we go through these theories and try to get to the heart of matters, because there are disinformation traps all over the place.
And, okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say was if we could mention for a minute, I wouldn't make too much of a distinction personally, although I confess I'm not an incredible expert on the subject, but you know, the various degrees of Nation of Islam versus Islam and all of that sort of thing. I think the general public is just having a picture of all of these things merging together. And as I said, Islam is being used as the distracting hand. And, of course, it is a very real growing phenomenon right now, which it's not to minimize the fact that it's out there and growing, and mosques are going up in Rome and everywhere else. But the fact of the matter is, it's the hand that's moving in the magic show. It's the hand that's distracting us. Well, the occult hidden hand is the one that we have to watch.
And, of course, who's putting up the money for the mosques in the United States? Why, it's the Saudi Arabians. And we're allowing them to spend literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, in this country building mosques and sending literature into our prisons to convert many of the blacks there to this radical Islamic belief. And then, of course, they then can become the cannon fodder for the violence that is anticipated here in America. And
That's right.
Really do intend to have violence here in America. And if you don't understand that, you and you're not beginning to prepare for this, why, you're incredibly naive. All of this is scripted. And those of you who heard our great interview last night with Mr. Sneblin, who had been certainly associated with the rites of Memphis and Mithraeum, he describes how in the early 1980s he was told about not only the first Gulf War, but the second Gulf War, and of course what would happen when we attacked Iraq. So, because attacking Iraq really doesn't make any sense. I mean, if we were going to attack anybody, we ought to be attacking Saudi Arabia.
Right.
We ought to be attacking Iran. So why are we attacking Iraq? Because that's what the script says. I mean, if you're doing a play on the stage, you may not like the script, but you better read it or recite it correctly. You can't change it in the middle of the play.
And we're watching a charade, and we're being distracted. And meanwhile, a more subtle and diabolical agenda is advancing all the time. And absolutely, you're right about these people being set up. I was present, I won't mention how or why or exactly where, but at a major convention of law enforcement individuals working on Homeland Security. And they covered on their agenda the fact that they believe there will be more suicide bombers. Now, why do they believe that? Because the script says there are going to be no more suicide bombers. It's in fact, if you have to create, if you were asked to create a formula for creating more suicide bombers in this country, one of the prime ingredients would certainly be to do something like attack Iraq. And I can't think of a more likely mechanism to create that, because, as you mentioned, you're not dealing with the threat that we said we were dealing with. And also, we're attacking, constantly attacking this nebulous abstraction, terrorism. How can you have a war on an idea? But by using an idea, an abstraction, terrorism, we can mold that, we can define that. When I say we, I mean the government, not really us, but these the occult overlords here who are trying to marshal us, they can mold and stretch and make that term elastic and unending and use it as they will. And they are doing exactly that. If you mentioned, that you had William Schnublin on, and I know he also was a member of the OTO, both the branch in this country, the Caliphate OTO, headed by William Breeze, as I mentioned in our last talk on those tapes you still carry, and he also is associated with the Typhonian OTO with Kenneth Grant's group. And I would mention that both groups are active in this country. The main one, which has legal status, which they secured in our U.S. courts, which, of course, won't surprise people who've been listening to your show, the group that won that has a website. So they own the domain name for the OTO legally in this country. But, of course, there are many other groups that have split off, whether those are controlled splits or not, or fraternal squabbles or whatnot. And Kenneth Grant has a representative in this country associated with him, Michael Berteau, who also goes by the name Aquarius. And Berteau in Chicago is also head of Voodoo and the Black Snake Cult. Well, this particularly scaly figure is also was ordained as an Episcopal minister. And I wanted to mention, Stan, I don't think we'd do our listeners a complete favor if we didn't mention that the tremendous crises we see going on in the churches, in the Catholic Church, for example, the horrendous scandals, and in the Protestant churches also, we can't pass that up without mentioning that this is part of the script, that this is part of the subversion of our civilization being worked from within by agents and perpetrators. And Michael Berteau is just sort of an example of somebody who has connections in both worlds. But there are many, many, many figures in this that have gained control of seminaries, that have gained control both Protestant and Catholic. And we should mention that we see the media having a feeding frenzy after the scandals in the Catholic Church, but we don't see them going after NAMBLA, do we? Which is the North American Man-Boy-Love Association, which had ties back through Harry Hay of the Mattachine Society to the OTO itself, Harry Hay being a communist and a member of Agape Lodge in Southern California of the OTO. But nobody's really attacking NAMBLA. Nobody's really going after, you know, the sanctioned pederasty and pedophilia of that group. But, of course, they will go after any scandal in a church to beat it down and to make it look, like Jesus Christ is ineffective and so forth. And, of course, I am not for one second endorsing nor condoning the scandals that we've learned about. I deplore them completely, but I also am under no illusions that many of these are committed by people who are false Christians in priestly garments who have actually given themselves over secretly to Lucifer. Amen. And we find if we penetrate back to the membership ranks and covens and lodges, dark lodges, we will find that, yes, indeed, these people have been conscious agents who've gone through seminaries, who faked their way through and gained positions of power, and meanwhile lead a double life and engage in church services and on the one hand, or masses, and then on the other hand, they're off doing their scaly, dark rituals on the side and engaged in pederasty. And so some of these people have just been caught. And what's ironic is that that's being put down to failures of Christianity or church discipline or whatnot. It has nothing to do with it. It's just Satanism at work.
And alive and well. In fact, I don't know if you've read the book Windswept House by Malachi Martin, but I talked to Father Martin, about the book. For our listeners, it starts with a satanic ritual in the basement of the Vatican where they have a feigned sacrifice, but the human sacrifice is not carried out there, but simultaneously elsewhere in the world when they're in contact by telephone with them. And And, of course, I said, do these things really go on? He said, oh, these things do go on. Everything in that book is accurate. I just could not use the actual names of the people, but many of the people, why you would be able to know exactly who we were speaking of. And certainly, some of these people were the cardinals who were just covering up for all the homosexuals and would transfer them from diocese to diocese to diocese so they could continue with their molestation of the children. And, of course, all of this is aimed at destruction of the Catholic Church. And so many of the Catholics, really, they don't even know where to go now. But we shouldn't pick on the Catholics because the Masonic influence into the Protestant Church is just as broad.
Right. Norman Vincent Peale, 33rd degree Freemason, very famous. And we can go back with the Catholic Church. As I mentioned in the last tape, and I won't go into all the details, but there was a famous attempt to secure the throne of the chair of Peter back in the late 1800s, which was intercepted by an alert Monsignor. And that was a cardinal who was Secretary of State under Leo XIII. It turned out after he died, they found out he was in the OTO. And so these attempts have been old. And we can even go way back, and we can find attempts to infiltrate the church hundreds of years ago, and we can look back at on the Protestant side, things like an early Lutheran clergyman, Andrea, trying to think of his full name, Johannes Andrea, I believe, and he was the author of one of the Rosicrucian manuals, and at the same time a Lutheran clergyman. So you can find intrigue and infiltration within Christianity, and in fact, we can go all the way back, Stan, to the New Testament. You have Simon Magus in the Bible, and you can read about him in writings of early Christians, church fathers. This man was an occultist and a magician, and he appears in the book of Acts in the New Testament, and he is denounced there, of course. But there have been attempts to infiltrate from the very beginning, and Jesus Christ predicted that.
Well, they're doing a great job of it, and I think probably more so now than ever before, as I personally believe we're moving towards a crisis in history.
I believe that, too. I think the signs are all pointing in the right direction. So what we can do is have people face the truth, but they can't just stop with knowledge of these things. I would urge people to ask themselves what they can do to help, because if we just sit content with shocking stories and do nothing, we really don't become part of the solution. We're still at the level of being maybe part of the problem, or at least not helping. So I would ask people to, you know, ask yourself what you can do with this information. And even if it's just to share it with others, even if it's just to reassess your own priorities in your life, get back to the solid spiritual basis with Christ, anything that you can do to help yourself, your neighbor, your family, and your friends, I would say, is to strike a blow in the right direction.
Well, let me just tell our listeners, we do have a program we're working on at the present time, and of course, we believe that education is the first clue, first thing, and that we have a 10-point program. Number one, of course, is to know, have a personal relationship with our Lord and understand the spiritual nature of the battle. Because if you get into this battle and you don't have a solid belief in the Lord, you'll be just destroyed. I've seen this happen too often.
Right. But
the next thing, of course, would be to learn about the Constitution. And we are, we'll be having with us this next couple of weeks, Michael Peruca, who has put together an 8-week program designed by John Eidsmo to teach people the Constitution, and it's with videos and a book. Michael Peruca is a lawyer who has become an activist and is putting a great deal of his own time and money into this effort. And those of you out there who would like to take on and start a study group to teach people about the Constitution, because if you don't know anything about the Constitution, you don't understand the difference between a republic and a democracy. You don't understand, why our nation offered more freedom than any other nation before. This whole idea of limited government, this idea of limitations placed on the power of the legislature, so that most of what's being done today is totally unconstitutional.
Correct.
You have to understand the Constitution. And then, of course, we can begin teaching people about the bad people and what they're about to do. And then, of course, we need, of course, to start getting the information out on television. We can't afford television, But there are cable television programs, and anybody can get access to that in their local communities, and we can make videos available to you to show there. And certainly Howard Phillips has a weekly program heard on over 100 programs, 100 stations across America. We needed 1,000, and I'd be glad to provide my videos to people who would show them on television. They can give them back to us afterwards if they'd like, and we hope to be producing more and more of those. And then, of course, we need to have people beginning putting together little tabloids, shoppers, and we can even help them provide the information to get out to the people in their area. There's a lot that you can do. You just have to be willing to commit yourself to do it. And these are just a few of the things. If you'd like to know more about it, we'll certainly be having Michael Peruca on our programs. We'll be having Howard Phillips on our programs. We'll be talking about how you can get involved, not just sitting around and feeling bad. Things are going to get a lot worse, aren't you? You're going to feel a lot terrible if you do nothing and we lose our freedom.
I would, if you don't mind me adding that, I'm also available for public talks on this subject, and I've done a number of them, and also I've just completed some manuscript. I'm shopping around for a publisher, so if God willing, I should see that in print pretty soon, exposing some of these things.
We'd love to get you down for some videos, if you wouldn't mind coming and really to tell this story just in a conversational form like we're doing here. But of course, this would be something that would be shown on cable television. We have to use every possible method that we have to reach out across America. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you can do a great deal to help us, if you will. We've got Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. I was listening to a rerun of yesterday's program, and we were talking about Robert Schuller being in the Masonry and Norman Vincent Peale. Now, I met Norman Vincent Peale personally, and, you know, the basic question I want to ask is, when a man does lead some people to Christ, you know, even if he may have some secret sins of his own, do you totally discount everything he does?
No. The thing is, we have to keep in mind that our Lord can bring greater good out of evil. That's why evil occurs in this world, not by because God actively wills it, but he permits it because in his providence and wisdom he can make use and defeat the devil, the most notorious example being the crucifixion of our Lord, where our Lord seemed to succumb to the designs of Satan to have him crucified. At least the devil thought he was winning, and our Lord turned that around on him, and the greatest event for our salvation history was that crucifixion followed by his resurrection. So the Lord can make use of things. And so the devil is not in control. God is in control. And so you can, and we also have to keep in mind that the diabolical side works by mixing truth with error. The devil has to take a risk to seduce people by mixing some truth in there. And every time he does it, he takes a calculated risk. So if you find some truth mixed in and you later find out this person was not associated with what he should have been, that doesn't mean every single thing the person said or did is to be discounted. One must just use discernment.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. He has a Bible Club newsletter, which I still get, and his wife gave a copy of a spiritual prescription he gave to somebody years ago. It says it's really quick. Take daily until condition improves. He says, first, think about Jesus Christ 2 minutes every day. Second, read one psalm a day. Each psalm is the story of a spiritual struggle. Third, read one chapter from the Gospels every day, for there you will get the truth about life. Fourth, go to church every Sunday and get yourself into an atmosphere of faith. Fifth, increase your gift to the church by 10%. Sixth, do something kind for someone every day. And seventh, attach yourself to some movement for justice and human betterment.
Now, well, you know, some of that's very good advice, but the problem is Norman Vincent Peale also went publicly on record in front of a TV camera and said, I found peace at a Shinto shrine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Shinto being the way of the gods in Japan, and it's a very, very diabolical, polytheistic sort of system of paganism. So, you know, the clues there are not the parts where he talks about Jesus Christ, but the parts where he says be involved with a movement for justice and so forth, which sounds quite clearly to me as a sort of a hint at joining a lodge. In fact, if you go to a lodge, you'll hear things about Jesus Christ bannered about occasionally, although they can't really... when they read the Bible in a lodge, and they do have a Bible on the altar, and they say they're Christians, and they'll sing How Great Thou Art, when they read the Bible, they can't read the name of Christ. They read the verse and won't say his name. Now, isn't that quite interesting? We know that in exorcisms, it's the name of Jesus Christ that the devils hate the most, and we see that in the Bible, when the name of Christ just drove the devils crazy. But in the lodge, they won't read the name of Christ. But they'll wave a Bible around, and they'll talk about prayer and that sort of thing. All of that is to dupe people, and we have to have a great level of spiritual discernment to fight our way through this forest of deception.
And let me tell you, Herman, when I was training in orthopedics, they had a Shrine Hospital in San Francisco, a Shrine Children's Hospital, and they did wonderful work there, and they helped to, repair the crippled bodies of children, and of course now they have their Shrine Burn Centers. They do a lot of good, but that doesn't mean that the basic origin of what they're doing is good. But, bad people can do good things. But, of course, what's the real ultimate goal of what they're doing?
Well, as I mentioned, Al Capone, I like to say he had those soup kitchens in Chicago, and there are people who would swear for years afterwards what a good man Al Capone was because they remember those soup kitchens. They lived there in Chicago. So, you know, you can't just judge it by those sort of things.
Okay, anything else you'd like to say, Herman?
Well, I'll just encourage everybody to come tomorrow.
Well, don't encourage anybody else to come. We're completely sold out.
Make the tapes available.
But anyway, we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
God bless you both.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, that was Herman calling from, we're just going to ask, do you have any parting? First of all, do you have a website or any way that the people could reach you, Craig?
Well, not yet, but if you don't mind, Stan, if somebody wanted to get in touch with me, is it okay if they contact you?
They certainly could, and if you'd like to get Craig to come to your church, and because he is certainly one of the most articulate sources of information we have. And then, of course, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
I would just leave them with the thought that just as our country and our nation is involved in self-deification, as acting as though we are gods, remember that that is not true, and we can't find peace until we find the truth in Christ.
Amen. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, and as soon as you got something else, let me know. We'd love to get you on again.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program tonight, and this is Craig Heimbichner, and he's done a tremendous amount of research, and so this is the time when we have to ask you to pray for America. We have to ask you to pray for our leaders, whether you like them or not, pray for them. And, of course, pray for our ministers, because they should be leading this spiritual battle. We ask you to pray for revival in America, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. We ask you, of course, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We ask you to pray for tomorrow, for our speakers, that what we say may have some impact on the people there, and that the message may then go out across America. We're going to hopefully be able to videotape this and make the tapes available. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you, God willing. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. You want me to turn the light back? Here, let me turn the light back. Well, we'll see it bright and early in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, what are you going to do for a car in the morning?
Well, we're
going
to take a week to
okay, that's fine.
I'm going to go start Saturday morning. It'll be there.
Okay, fine. So, okay, fine.
Yeah, sometime I'll have to start.
When are you going to get the car to the car tomorrow?
They're selling
them
tomorrow. Yeah. It is, yeah. It's going to be a Monday. That's all right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then it's going to be a Thursday. It's going to be driving to the car tomorrow. That's great. Yeah, okay.
Fine.
Okay. Yeah, you can register for tomorrow.
This is the owner.
Now,
has it got a good motor in it? Or
yes.
How many miles do you have on it?
I don't know. I don't know, but he said it's